Good morning, everyone. Don't you just love hearing about other people's holidays? I'm so glad you do, because I just can't speak this morning without referring back to the trip that Chris and I recently made to Israel. For the final phase of the trip, we spent 5 days in and around Jerusalem. And on the morning that we arrived, we were taken in our coach to the Mount of Olives for the panoramic view of the old city and the obligatory group photograph. And we are in there somewhere. It's quite a big group, but you might be able to find us. Then we made our way on foot down the hill into the Kidron Valley before crossing over and climbing uphill into the old city. I struggled to actually believe that I was there doing this walk, partly because it was an amazing thing to be doing, but also because I knew that I had to preach here on Palm Sunday. And here I was making the very same journey that Jesus made on his triumphal entry into Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. In common with any place that is really old, Jerusalem goes very deep. It's been built on and fought over and destroyed many times. And so the story of the city, archaeologically, is unearthed by digging down through the various layers to reveal the different stages of development. Now, as we come to look at the story of Palm Sunday, we quickly discover that it too is a composite of several layers of meaning and significance that requires us to explore and dig down a little if we're to try and grasp what the events of the day were all about and what it has to say to us today. On its own, the story of Jesus arriving in Jerusalem leaves us little to work with. The journey from Bethany to the old city isn't long. It's almost all downhill, still is. And the curious business of acquiring a donkey along the way and the response of the crowds and waving of palms does make it all just a little bit odd. However, it is remarkable. And to appreciate some of that, we need to probe through a few of those layers to get some understanding. Now, before going to Jerusalem, we spent 2 days up in the north of the country, in and around Galilee, including an overnight stop really rather close to the border with Syria and Lebanon. Just nice. The reason, though, that we were up there was so that we could pay an early morning visit to the ruins of Caesarea Philippi. Now, this was one of those light bulb experiences for me, where something that you already know suddenly takes on a whole new meaning. And can you believe it? It featured in the sermon that I preached here back in February. Now, I'm sure that you all clearly recall the details of that sermon. Anyway, it was about getting the right mindset for evangelism, and during which I commented on the structure of Matthew's gospel and the pivotal points followed by the words, "from this time forward." Well, and this is where it gets really exciting. This is Caesarea Philippi today. And it's one of the sources of the River Jordan. And this is what it probably looked like when Jesus was there. It was a hotbed of pagan worship and included places of human sacrifice. And it was an absolutely dreadful place. But it was here that Peter declared, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus says, "You are the rock upon which I'll build my church, and the gates of hell," and they were surrounded by them, "will not prevail against it." It seems Jesus deliberately took the disciples to Caesarea Philippi in order to establish with them his true identity and then to signal where it was all leading. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Now, as we know, Jesus' ministry lasted about 3 years, and all the gospel writers place enormous emphasis on just the last 8 days. John, in his account, uses 43% of his gospel just to cover that final week. And despite all the teaching and the miracles and parables and healings, the events of that week in Jerusalem carry the greatest significance. So as we today begin what we call Holy Week with the story of Palm Sunday, we need to grasp that the previous 3 years, and especially the weeks since Caesarea Philippi, were leading up to this final trip to Jerusalem. Now, as Jesus approaches Jerusalem, he stops at Bethany, where he had friends and a place to stay. Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus lived there. And it was only a couple of miles from Jerusalem. In his gospel account, John recounts at this time the extraordinary miracle when, having died, Lazarus is called out of the tomb and restored to life. Now, as miracles go, this final example tops them all. And it's fair to say that it electrified the people of Bethany and many from Jerusalem who traveled to the village to give comfort to the sisters in the loss of their brother. Rising from the dead was as big a deal then as it would be now. And of course, the news spread fast and wide. For his disciples and those who had witnessed the events in Bethany, Jesus was undoubtedly worthy of cloaks being laid down, palm branches being waved, and cries of Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. As we noticed before, Jesus had great clarity about what he did, and his arrival in Bethany just around Passover time was no coincidence. The celebration in Jerusalem caused huge crowds of people to make their way to the city. It is suggested that with so many folk wanting to be there for this special festival, the city would have been completely choked, and many would have had to camp out in the surrounding area for the week. So it was into this overcrowded festival atmosphere that Jesus chose to make his entry. Now, the arrival in Jerusalem isn't exactly a parable, but it is a carefully staged and structured event with its truth shrouded in clear but coded significance. It's not unlike the archaeological story of the old city. There are various layers that have to be probed and investigated to reveal the meaning. This event is often referred to as Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Now, a triumphal entry was then a very Roman affair. Victorious commander or dignitary would display his triumph by parading in splendor with his army at his back and banners flying, etc. It was a mechanism to demonstrate power and authority. And the central figure would be mounted on a fine horse as he approached the conquered city, there for all to see. Now, curiously, it is suggested that at this time, this precise time, this was what was happening on the other side, the western side of Jerusalem, as Jesus was arriving on the eastern side from the Mount of Olives. And the reason for that idea is that such a big festival as the Passover, going on in a politically unstable place like Jerusalem, with so many out-of-town folk descending on the city, the Roman authorities knew that there was potential for trouble, and so their top man in the area, Pontius Pilate, would have been dispatched to be on the scene. Now, remember that the Romans were an occupying force and had to impress upon the locals just who was in charge. So a bit of pageantry and the flexing of a little military muscle in the form of a triumphal entry would have served the purpose and shown the Jews that no nonsense would be tolerated. And this would have been especially so at Passover time because of the importance and significance to the Jewish people. And remember, this celebration was all about freedom from oppression as Moses led the people of Israel out of slavery into Egypt. So at one level, Jesus' entry would have been seen perhaps as a bit of a parody of what the Romans were doing, and so was quite a cute way of mocking the authorities. And with this not being wasted on the crowds, folk were well up for it, joined in the affair with enthusiasm, but fairly safely, because from the Roman perspective, such an odd parade would not have registered as a threat. It was indeed quite an odd affair. Jesus appears from Bethany riding astride a donkey. Well, in fact, it was less than that. It was a baby donkey, a colt, a normal-sized man on an undersized colt. Now, this artist's impression gives perhaps an idea of the slightly ridiculous nature of the arrangement. In his gospel, John comments that the disciples didn't really get why Jesus did the donkey thing until rather later on. Jesus, though, knew exactly what he was doing, and the Romans would have had no idea, and probably most of the Jews would not have understood the point unless they had a good working knowledge of the prophecy of Zechariah, as we heard earlier. Now, this part of Zechariah's prophecy is about the coming of the Messiah. And so as Jesus made his progress towards Jerusalem, he was proclaiming clearly, but without the authorities realizing it, that he was God's long-promised Messiah. Whilst perhaps running with a slightly strange image of the donkey ride, the people crowding around Jesus knew that he was the man who raised Lazarus from the grave, and also that he had a reputation for doing and saying some extraordinary things. The sort of things that might just mean he was indeed the one who could bring about the change that the Jewish people, so long suppressed beneath the Roman sandal, so hoped for. The thing was that most people just didn't really get what Jesus was about at all. And even those closest to him probably held the idea that all he'd talked about and shown them was going to lead to the defeat and removal of the Roman occupation. Thus, we have the curious figure of Jesus descending the track down from the Mount of Olives, mounted on a little donkey. The crowds greet him with cheers of enthusiasm as he mocks the Roman authorities, and as they join in with the spectacle, putting cloaks on the ground, waving branches from the trees, they may well have been thinking that perhaps this strange yet undoubtedly remarkable bloke might just be the one to spearhead a revolt that would drive the Romans out, a view fueled by limited theology of messiahship. Now, this journey to Jerusalem ends with Jesus entering the temple area, having a look around, and then, since it appeared to be getting a bit late, trekking off back up the hill to Bethany, and thus ends the day of Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So exactly why it is that we bother to mark this occasion raises some questions, because despite the points made through the imagery and the code, it isn't much of an event to write home about, never mind meriting a special day in the calendar. So to perhaps unwrap all this just a little bit more, we need to pull back again and see the bigger picture. As we've seen, Palm Sunday is preceded by the events in Galilee and especially at Caesarea Philippi. Jesus' arrival in Jerusalem was only the beginning of what the remainder of the week held, and so it is to what followed we must now look. Holy Week, the last week, the 43% of John's Gospel. is, as we know, of supreme significance. Jesus actually returns each day to Jerusalem from his overnight stays in Bethany. It's the preparation days for the Passover. City teeming with people, and the Roman authorities are understandably a bit on edge about anything untoward happening. Word is on the streets that Jesus is around. The atmosphere is highly charged. With the benefit of hindsight, we, of course, know what happens. The temple is cleansed. The Last Supper is eaten. Feet are washed. Prayers are said. Disciples fall asleep. Jesus anguishes in the garden. Judas betrays. The arrest happens. The trial is held. And Jesus is passed around the city as the Jewish leaders bay for his blood. And the Romans don't really see the point, nor do they need the trouble. Finally, hands are washed. Barabbas is released. The crucifixion takes place on the Friday morning. Before the end of the day, Jesus is dead and buried. And perhaps almost everyone involved, Roman, Jew, pilgrim, or disciple, for them, it all appeared to be the end of everything. Saturday passes, to be followed by Sunday morning, after which everything changed. Indeed, from that time forward, the world is a different place. So whilst in itself Palm Sunday isn't that much to celebrate, it signals the start of the most extraordinary week in history. And that is why today we mark it. Perhaps just now, you might like to take hold of the cross that you collected earlier on. It's no accident that the palm leaf that we are given is woven into the shape of a cross. For the events of Palm Sunday lead us to Good Friday and then to Easter Sunday. Sadly, these days, we face something of an issue, because in the normal run of things, the next time that most of us will meet together will be next Sunday, Easter Day. And it is thus all too easy to jump from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday without giving much thought or attention to the events of Holy Week. If we do that, then we deprive ourselves of the opportunity to be immersed in the story and the reality of that epic week. So can I urge you this time, be it here in church or elsewhere, to take the time to revisit Holy Week, especially Maundy Thursday and Good Friday. For in so doing, you will then arrive at Easter Sunday in a much greater state of readiness and expectation to truly celebrate and embrace the joy and thanksgiving of the day. Just two more of my holiday snaps. If you've been there, then you will recognize the Garden Tomb in Jerusalem. It perhaps reminds us of what Holy Week is all about. The tomb, which you can go into, is empty. You will not find Jesus there. For as the sign on the door explains, he is not here, for he is risen.